Aging as Dharma Practice. To begin with, I'll request your indulgence while I read you the wisdom of the Cat in the Hat on aging. I cannot see, I cannot pee, I cannot chew, I cannot screw. Oh my God, what can I do? My memory shrinks, my hearing stinks, no sense of smell, I look like hell. My mood is bad, can you tell? My body's drooping, have trouble pooping. The golden years have come at last. The golden years can kiss my ass. Well, everyone gets the joke. Why is that? Mostly, it's because so many of us can see ourselves in this litany of complaints. We are either losing our hearing or witnessing the body's relentless droop or noticing some other mildly shocking change. Humor, thank goodness, is peaked when we identify in some way with the situation. And here, like it or not, we can identify. For those a bit more distant from this scene, here's a reminder. Dear friend, please know as you pass by, as you are now, so once was I. As I am now, so you will be. Prepare yourself to follow me. Our attitudes, of course, are deeply conditioned by our culture, which values and rewards all things new and young. Aging is the enemy to be kept at bay. We find little support for moving toward and preparing for death. There's an assumption that we all want to be young forever. This assumption is constantly insinuating its way into everyday conversation. As in, you sure don't look 40 or 50 or whatever age. The ego, of course, loves this, having received its life and sustenance in the Western world. You know as well as I do that we are valued to the extent that we appear to have lived for some 25 to 40 years, particularly for women. Any bodily quirk that suggests a longer stay is to be hastily corrected, rejuvenated, lifted, suctioned, colored, toned, tucked, replaced, or, if all else fails, hidden from sight to shield others from their own anxieties. Upon close examination, the cultural mandate is astonishing in its implications. We are asked not only to be ashamed of our bodies, but also to engage with great effort and determination the only battle we are completely assured of losing. A few weeks ago, I greeted the start of my 75th year on this planet in this form. One aspect of my response in days past involved a nagging sense of having been cheated. What came to mind were the reminders from protective parents that I wasn't old enough for some interesting-looking activity, to drive, to attend parties, to date. I longed for the day when I would finally be old enough to join life as a full participant. Well, life moved on, the years came and went, and at some point the message changed to, "You're too old for that." What had happened? How did I miss my proverbial 15 minutes on stage? The certainty of aging arrived without warning during an annual physical exam. No serious health problem emerged, alhamdulillah. Arabic expression for thanks be to God. However, somewhat to my alarm, both a medical student and my own physician measured the blood pressure at 132 over 80 after decades of carrying around 100 over 60. I could almost feel the impending stroke. But my doctor, in her usual no-nonsense fashion, put it all into perspective, saying, When we get old, the body starts to calcify, no matter how good care we take of it. I remember turning around to look for someone else in the room. To whomever could she be talking? Surely not me. Old? And calcifying? Ram Dass quotes an anonymous author, "The gray in your hair doesn't make you old, nor the crow's feet under your eyes, I'm told. But when your mind makes a contract your body can't fill, you're over the hill, friend, you're over the hill." Memory also brings up the experience of having a cast removed from the left arm after surgery several years ago. I entered the office for the removal of the cast, feeling exuberant. There was no pain, the hand had obviously healed quickly. But the actual experience of cast removal changed everything. The arm had become pale, the muscles atrophied, the skin thin as tissue paper. One look sent my mind racing back to the countless cadavers seen in years past. Whose arm was this, and how did it come to be dangling from my shoulder? And more precisely, what did it say about my actual vulnerability to death? I left deeply humbled by this disturbing Dharma lesson. Our human bodies are so fragile, so close to the edge. They require very specific temperatures, pH balance, oxygen levels, sugar and insulin levels, fluid and electrolyte balance. It's astounding that we survive as well as we do. At the same time, we are very adaptive, and the homeostatic and rejuvenative processes are beautifully complex and life-sustaining. Cycles of birth and death and rebirth recur endlessly all around us, reflected in so many traditions and worldly phenomena. In the natural world, dead bodies serving as food for the living. Christianity's hatch, match, and dispatch processes. Hinduism, cycles of the yugas, Shakti, Shiva. Chinese Taoism, yin yang. And every 2 to 4 years, elections in America. We can only rest in the certainty of uncertainty. In his book, The Wisdom of Insecurity, Alan Watts writes of the difference between belief and faith. The believer will open his mind to the truth on condition it fits with his preconceived ideas and wishes. Faith, on the other hand, is an unreserved opening of the mind to the truth, whatever it may turn out to be. Faith is a plunge into the unknown. Belief clings, but faith lets go. Recalling a Dharma talk by Gil Fronsdell, it's clear that buying into the cultural rap or trap on aging keeps us bogged down in what he calls about mind. We think about aging. We think about what will happen as we age. We think about death. Think about how we will live. Think about money and whether it will last. Think about the state of our health. Think about the disintegrating body. Attention to the practice of here mind, however, completely reframes the picture. In here mind, we stay focused on the direct experience as it presents itself. At first, there is sadness on seeing the relentless and irreversible loss. We may notice a fearful grasping as ego resists the inevitable dissolution of the body. But to the extent that we center in here mind, anxiety cannot take hold. And as we persist, something remarkable so often happens. a deep intimacy with the aging body emerges, along with the rise of equanimity. When we are willing to open to the process of aging, staying in here mind, what arises is awe, wonder, and gratitude for having lived at all. This is Zalman Schachter Shalomi. Although we must do all that we can to remain fit, I believe that coming to terms with these physical diminishments is a major developmental task of old age that helps awaken the elder state of consciousness with its promise of expanded mental potentials, spiritual renewal, and greater social usefulness. If we consciously embrace our aging in the late 50s and early 60s, we can avoid becoming elderly and initiate the process of becoming elders. In this way, the breakdown of the youthful self can lead to the breakthrough of the emerging elder self. Elderhood, then, is a state of consciousness that arises in the context of physiological aging. Longfellow said, "Age is opportunity no less than youth itself, though in another dress. And as the evening twilight fades away, the sky is filled with stars invisible by day." Here's a poem by Jenny Joseph, as quoted in Ram Dass's book, Still Here. It's called Warning. "When I am an old woman, I shall wear purple with a red hat which doesn't go and doesn't suit me. And I shall spend my pension on brandy and summer gloves and satin sandals and say, 'We've no money for butter.' I shall sit down on the pavement when I'm tired and gobble up samples in shops and press alarm bells and run my stick along the public railings and make up for the sobriety of my youth. I shall go out in my slippers in the rain and pick the flowers in other people's gardens and learn to spit. You can wear terrible shirts and grow more fat and eat 3 pounds of sausage at a go, or only bread and pickles for a week, and hoard pens and pencils and beer mats and things in boxes. Yes, but now we must have clothes to keep us dry and pay the rent and not swear in the street and set a good example for the children and must have friends to dinner and read the papers. But maybe I ought to practice a little now so people who know me are not too shocked and surprised when suddenly I am old and start to wear purple." In recent days, I was driving along Eastern Parkway going west. As I crossed the intersection at Norris Place, a familiar-looking car passed, going the other way. In the front seat were two figures I knew by heart, my son and his beloved. There was an urge to honk and wave, but the moment passed too quickly for this. I was left with a distinct emptiness, a wondering how often they would pass me by, what their lives would be like after I am no longer on this plane. How could they even continue to go about their business without me around? Stephen Levine offers a useful exercise called Dead for a Day. Take one day without an agenda. move through your usual haunts, but without talking to anyone. Instead, imagine that you are invisible, dead, as it were. I am not here, and yet these people seem to go on with their lives and their dreams as if nothing had changed. As Stephen Levine asks, who was born and who in fact is it that dies? Ram Dass says, ask yourself, who am I now that my body is no longer what it was? What is the thing in me that has not changed? The I that is observing this process. This is from Stephen's book, A Year to Live. One of the first beliefs we come across when we begin to examine is that the only reason we imagine we will die is because we are convinced we were born. But we cannot trust hearsay. We must find out for ourselves. Were we born? Or was that just the vessel in which our timelessness momentarily resides? What, indeed, was born? And who dies? From the Bhagavad Gita. Never the spirit was born. The spirit shall cease to be never. Never was time it was not. End and beginning are dreams. Birthless and deathless and changeless abideth the spirit forever. Death doth not touch it at all. I would still like to live to be 100. But as one who felt alarm over the prospect of calcifying, my current learning surely involves releasing a self-image that demands perfect health and a predictable ordering of the day. This is a poem called The Difference by Ruth Pitter. There in the field, hear the voice of the lark day long that leaps up loud with his love into the clear gray. But if the nest were harried and the mate that he married were fled from the place, he must cease from the song. But you must sing ever in spite of all wrong, whatever is lost, strayed, or stolen away. There by the water behold the beautiful face of the flower that looks up into the smile of the day. But if the spring were failing or the cold wind were wailing, she would sink, would fall down there, would die in her grace. But you must bloom still in the desolate place, whatever is frozen or withered away. Regardless of your chronological age, you no doubt have your own stuck places around aging. However, for all of us, here is a question that needs to be considered. Will these years or weeks or months be spent in grasping, collecting, defending, judging, and opining? Or will they be spent in generosity, in loving, and open-heartedness? If we are honest, so much of our lives have been spent in ignorance and fearing and grasping and hiding, all based on the erroneous belief that who we are was born and will die. Dare we release the old stories about who I am, the self-blame, the blame of others, the efforts to control others and our circumstances? There is now no time to lose. May each day of mindfulness bring a sharper focus. May we feel the urgency of devotion to the Dharma. May we use all situations to awaken. May we see all beings as our teachers. May we grow in mercy and compassion. We close with the words of Omar Khayyam. Come fill the cup, and in the fire of spring your winter garment of repentance fling. The bird of time has but a little way to flutter, and lo, the bird is on the wing.